I saw it mute. Anyway. So again, yeah. So this is a topic that's covered from mostly all information security related books. And so it should be part of this course as well. We're talking about cybersecurity, and that's also very important to talk about. And so this is the topic for today, and the contents. We will start with a short introduction. We will give an overview about risk management, and that will be then detailed in the next subtopics like risk identification, risk assessment, risk control, differences between quantitative versus qualitative risk management, and then some best practices that might help you or your future organization be more prepared as related to risk management. So yeah, let's start with this case that was also part of Data Sicherheit for Lederer book. So there was this popular case of the Danish company Maersk, I'm not sure now. They were called, they were an international company, and they were like having different activities spread worldwide, mostly related to shipping services. And something happened to them on the spring of 2017, so 2 years and a half ago. They were, their computers, their system was affected from NotPetya. So it was one of the most popular cases at the time. I also used it in one of my slides in the first lectures. And it was one of the most affected companies at the time from a ransomware. It was NotPetya. And there was like something like a $200 million loss from all this activity. So what happened? Actually, it seemed that Maersk had this service provider from Ukraine. They were the company established and based in Ukraine. And it might be that whenever they thought about this, they had already done a risk assessment process, right? So it's like trying to balance between the benefits and the costs of having some partner in that side. And then they decided about it. But what happened next was that there was also this, at the time there was this annexation of Crimea event, and it seems that some different companies and agencies in the Ukraine, in Ukrainian territory, were affected from different kinds of attacks. And I guess that one of them was also this Ukrainian provider for Maersk. It got infected, and since it was part of the software systems, all the software updates that were coming from them were also carrying this virus further. So everything was like soon affected, everything propagated. And then in the end, they learned it the hard way. They learned that they should have this continuous process, not just once. They shouldn't stop from considering the risks from time to time, because risk management, after all, is a process. It's not something that is like within a finite time or something. And that's also what I try to transmit to some of the teams that I have in supervision, which is like some of these activities that you were supposed to discuss about in the project plan, they should be considered like they should be carried on during the whole time of the project, not just somewhere in the middle, sometimes by the end, and so on. So yeah, whenever you consider risk management as one of the most important processes in the whole project about information security or any types of project, you should then be able to save more money than you would be able if you didn't think about this in the first time, and if you just chose the cheapest solution and so on. And then further on, we are talking about risk management, and then if we would like to make it as practical as possible, we can think about different ways how a certain event or a certain procedure might be requiring this risk analysis or risk management process. So it may start from a social media account. We all know today that all kinds of businesses try to have an online presence. They might have a website, they might have, and then surely they should have this social media presence, they should have this social media account, Twitter account, Facebook account, whatever. And so the social media account would be responsible after that for all the information. The company, the staff, the ones that are related to maintaining and managing the social media presence would be responsible for the information that's shared and given from this account, from their page. So they should also be careful enough to not allow this account to be taken over from someone who's unauthorized, someone who's from the outside, a malicious user. And then what they should do, they should maybe try and sit and discuss, and this should be done in advance, and have this risk process where they analyze all the risks that might be related to having this new social media account and what might happen if something goes wrong. And then they might also be able to find a solution that could also restrict some of these risks, as we will talk about later, maybe avoid some of them, reduce some others, and so on. One of the typical things would be, for example, to have this so-called two-factor authentication. We already talked about it, and it might be a good idea for all types of accounts. So, yeah. And then further on, inside an organization, there is this typical intranet, there is this typical platform where you keep sending emails and exchanging emails with your colleagues, with your bosses, and so on. And everything like that should be secure enough so that you will not find your communication or the files that you share somewhere else, somewhere in the black market, let's say. So in order to do that, then again, you would need to have this risk analysis or risk management process. And you also need to know that, as I mentioned before, emails are since at least a few years now considered as an evidence. So it might be that the email that you are sending or that you are receiving might be considered an evidence tomorrow in a certain case. And then having said that, they are considered an important asset for the organizations as part of the whole information assets. And so they need to be protected from unauthorized access. And how do you do this? You start with this risk analysis. You start by understanding what are the typical risks about the unsecure emails or not secure enough. And then you develop some solutions. One might be the typical one, as it's always the case, is encrypting them. So trying to hide whatever content there is between the sender and the receiver. And then, talking about ransomware, I just mentioned a case about it, Maersk from 2017. Now the ransomware is becoming a daily problem from different organizations. It's becoming highly likely to happen in any kind of organization in recent days. So whatever the organization should do, they should try at least to reduce the risk from these whatever ransomware, because they also are like changing their functions, their actions from time to time. So they are being morphed into different ways of attacking and different ways of trying to get access. So whatever an organization should do should just try to at least start from the basic stuff, like updating the last, having the last patches, and also performing backups and so on. So in here, as you can see, we are talking about reducing risk, which is one of the typical ways how you can manage the risk in your organization. And then, talking about an overview of risk management, there is this famous saying from Sun Tzu. I think I mentioned a part of it before. And this is also very relevant to risk. So, whenever you know your enemy and you know yourself, you should not fear the result of even 100 battles. So, if you know yourself but not your enemy, you will also, you might have some victories, but you will also suffer a defeat. And then, if you know neither yourself nor your enemy, then you should just resign, you should raise a white flag, you should be defeated in every battle. This is part of the book from Sun Tzu. I think some of you have were interested or something. The Art of War. This is from many years ago, ancient times. And actually, Sun Tzu, as I mentioned before, is cited in different risk-related or information security-related books because of his thoughts and his vision at the time. So, when we talk about risk management, we should always think about three major pillars, three major undertakings. We should talk about risk identification, which is like every organization must identify all the risks that can affect its activities. And, of course, in the information security part, the information assets. Then risk assessment, which is every kind of risk which is identified from the first step should be correctly assessed, measured, and evaluated so that then the organization understands what should be the next action. And the next action should be risk control. So how should all the risks that now have been evaluated, have a cost-related function or something, how should they be controlled? How should we deal with them? And then you have all these other options of how to manage or to control the risk. That's why it's called risk management. Some option might be reducing it, another option might be accepting it. It depends. We will talk about this. So this is a general overview of risk management. You have risk identification, which is split between different sub-activities, risk assessment, and then risk control. We're not going to go through all of these activities because some of them are easy to understand, and also some others are like maybe too detailed to be mentioned here, but I think it's relevant for you to understand at least the three main activities and some of their most important parts. So before we go to each of the three of them, let's talk about some other thing, which is called risk appetite. Risk appetite is a very relevant term when it comes to how the organizations behave in terms of the risk they're facing every day. By definition, risk appetite is the quantity and the nature of risk accepted by the organization while they are trying to balance this typical trade-off between having a more secure environment or having a more accessible environment, right? Accessible systems. So if you're trying to secure some procedures, it might be highly possible that you will also delay some activities, right? Because you are like trying to authenticate in a deeper level, trying to use more information from the user, trying to confirm each step from his supervisor and so on. And so you are somehow delaying the usual activities. And that's in the end of the day, in the end of the month, that's like additional costs. And so this is like, are you willing to accept a certain level of risk in order to achieve your mid-term, long-term goals, etc.? This is also known as risk tolerance. So how much risk are you able to tolerate, to accept? And so some organizations might have a very low risk tolerance, and we're talking here about financial institutions, medical institutions, government or military institutions or whatever. And also hopefully their partners, because there are some cases where these partners are bringing the problems. And then other organizations are likely more risk-taking. Take, for example, startups or whatever, usually in the business sector, in the industry, not just like this, you know, important sectors. And so when we talk about this, it means that some organizations have a low risk appetite, others have a high risk appetite, and whatever an organization needs to do, and the staff, and you as part of any future organization, should be to understand that you should base this level, this rate of risk appetite on certain evidence and facts, and not just on some initial thoughts or just like something that you would like to do, but and so yeah. So it should be based on a very good analysis, and that's why we're talking about this thing today, so that you understand how can you bring this information that you have here in another way. And then there is also this important thing about never spending more on protecting an asset than what's the asset's worth. That's also like a law. And that's also related to some research and studies before that mentioned that you shouldn't spend more than 39 or 40%, I think, of what's the total asset worth, because it doesn't, you will not have all the assets lost or something. So there should be something in the middle. And further on, residual risk. Another thing to mention when we talk about risk terms is the residual risk, or whatever is left after the risk management process has concluded. As you can see from the image there, you can see that there is this small portion of risk which is like left after we try to reduce all the risk related to the asset, the risk related to the threats, and the risk related to the vulnerabilities. So everything that was prevented or reduced by using certain safeguards as related to the vulnerabilities that were thought or found, the threats that were possible to happen, and the maybe you can also try to remove a part of the information asset in order to make it not available for the malicious user. And that's all removed from these new safeguards, new policies, new technology, and so on. And whatever is left after this, that's called residual risk. I would like to have something to point out, but do you see that rectangle which is shared between threat and vulnerability? Is there something there that, I mean, why it's like that? Is there anyone who could understand maybe that? That's because some vulnerabilities may actually transform into a certain threat. And that's how you can remove both of them, because they are like connected. And so residual risk is nothing less than a function of a threat less the effect of the safeguards reducing this threat, a vulnerability less the effect of the safeguards reducing the vulnerability, and the asset less the effect of the safeguards reducing the asset value. So the bottom of it is that whenever the organization, the staff, the people that are responsible for the risk management activities understand that there is some residual risk left, this is not a problem. So it is okay to have a bit of risk. As mentioned before, we also have the risk appetite. So as long as the residual risk is less than or equal to the risk appetite that the company has at any stage or at any moment, then this is okay. So we might consider that this is good because we have been able to reduce the risk as related to the risk appetite. So that's good for the company and for the stakeholders and for the senior management. So this should be like the ultimate goal for the information security program, the information security team, the risk management team, etc. And then if there is any new potential risk or anything new that must be considered or evaluated, that should be reassessed again. That should be again put within this risk assessment process. And so that's another thing then the process will start over again. So okay, let's have a break and then we start with these other sources. So let's go on with the second hour. We'll start talking about risk identification. As we mentioned in the other image, there are some steps or stages through which we go through risk identification. And the important thing, the important part about this is that all the professionals in an organization regarding information security should be able to understand and identify the organization's information asset in the beginning. So that's how this whole process begins. You will see that all these pillars that I mentioned before start by this thing called planning and organizing the process. Why? Because this is teamwork. This is a team doing the job. So you should start with a plan, with an agenda, and you should start with organizing everything and making sure that everything will be completed in due time and nothing is left unrecognized or something like that. So for the risk identification part, we start with planning and organizing, then we go on with identifying, inventorying, and categorizing the assets that are available to the organization, classifying, evaluating, and prioritizing the ones that are most important and also maybe that could have the most severe consequences from a certain attack. And then identifying them, prioritizing the threats, which would be like, what are the typical threats that could affect our organization assets? And then also the vulnerabilities that are related. So we will not go one by one, but we will go on with the identification of the asset. And on this part, we will start just by defining this high-level components. So whenever we talk about a system, we are always trying to understand who are the people that are responsible or that will be using the system, the end users. What are the procedures that the system is being built and will be working. The data that are part of the overall process. The software that will be part of the system, and also the hardware. And then when we talk about these system components, we should also look at the asset perspective from them. So from the asset perspective, we can say that when we talk about the people, we should be able to distinguish between the employees that will be responsible and end users for the system, and the others, which are like non-employees. And for both of them, there should be like different types of information collected and transferred and so on and shared. Then about the procedures, all the procedures that should be stored and that are related to the system that are also somehow maybe confidential. The data and the information that's related to the asset, that's really very important. The software, and then when we talk about hardware, we have the system devices, we have the peripheral devices, we have the network components. So we have somehow all the parts of the puzzle, all the parts of the system. Then as soon as we are able to identify all the information that is stored, that has to be stored, that has to be shared, etc., related to these components, then we are able to identify all assets as related to information that we should be trying to protect as an organization. Then we go on further, and then we try to then we try to classify the information, which is like trying to understand what kind of information are we dealing on. Should that be confidential? Should that be highly secret? Should that be like known to the public or whatever? These are like typical categories. I'm not going in more details about that. And then we also have the prioritization. So it's like whenever we have these different information assets, we should try to prioritize between which would be the most important assets and the others that are not as important. So in order to do this, the organization, the team that's dealing with this process, usually performs this so-called weighted factor analysis, which is like trying to analyze on different aspects the importance, the relevance of a certain asset or a certain information asset. In this case, I just took two different information assets, which is like what is the information that's related to the customer order via a secure socket layer, and how is it relevant to the organization. And based on three criterias, what would be the impact to the revenue level, what would be the impact to the profitability level or to the public image, it seems that the customer order is really highly relevant, at least compared to the customer service request by email. So if we are trying to protect, if we are trying to distinguish between should we focus on protecting the customer order information or the customer email contents, we should maybe decide on the customer order, because that's like keeping some confidential, you know, like personal identifiable information. And then the customer service request by email might contain something, but of course not as relevant as that other order. And this is like the final procedure before we start identifying and prioritizing the threats. When we want to identify and prioritize the threats, the main thing to do would be to answer some typical questions, such as which would be the threats that are current danger to the given asset in a given environment, which would be the threats that then are representing the highest dangers as in the organizational level to the organization information. And that's when we try to employ the thing called quantitative measures, or we might also employ the qualitative measures. We usually distinguish between these things, and there will also be a part about this in the lecture, so I'm not detailing too much about this. Then we also should answer to the question, how much would it cost to recover from a successful attack? Because whenever we identify the threats, it might be that one of the threats is not as severe as the other one if it becomes real. So what we should do, we should also, once we identify them, we should also prioritize them. And how we prioritize them? By understanding what are the typical costs that the company should incur if this threat would happen. And this is like basically recovery cost. And then also, which would be the threat, the single threat, or which would be the threats that would require more funding as related to preventing them? Which would be the ones that would be more costly in terms of prevention costs? These are like typical questions that the team that's responsible for this process should ask and should answer by this time. And then there might be also more questions that might be related to the industry, to the typical stage. For example, if we are perceiving that there is this rise in ransomware or whatever, there are many different questions. So this is like the risk identification process, and the last part of it is assessing the vulnerabilities that are also related to the threats and so on. So I thought I should also go on with the next pillar, which is risk assessment. This is also one of the most important ones. In the risk assessment pillar or process, part of the whole process, we are trying to assign a risk score or risk rating to each of the information assets that we own or the organization owns. So first of all, we start by planning and organizing the process, and then in this specific case, the plan, the general plan, would be to make sure that by the end of this whole process, we have created a good method to evaluate and to understand what are the costs behind each risk that we are probably facing in the future, or maybe in the short-term future. So the main goal would be to create this method, and then one typical function or formula to in order to understand what would be the level of or the value of certain risk would be the one put here, which is somehow highly related to probability. I'm not sure if you have already learned about probability and how it's relevant to different activities and events. So the risk is like combined function of different probabilities and values. This is like when we are trying to quantitatively measure the risk. So when we have the data. So for example, when we have information about a typical threat that we already identified before. So when we have information of a typical attack and so on. So we start by understanding what should be the probability of a successful attack in the organization, which is like the probability of a successful attack combined or multiplied by the likelihood of this attack this present moment. This is like yearly information. And then we have the expected loss from a successful attack, which is again evaluated by multiplying the asset value, the information asset value that we think might be attacked from this attack, and the rate of exposure, which is like the probable loss, which is like how much from this information asset will be lost if the attack is going to be real. So we have these two parts that also multiply between them. And then we also have this error margin. So whenever we are talking about quantitative analysis, we should also think about error, because nothing is like accurate. We already mentioned that at least in information security and in cybersecurity, there is no available perfect information. So we cannot understand anything completely. Even when we are trying to prevent threats or different attacks and so on, we are just thinking that it might happen. It can be that it might never happen. But it also can be that it might happen sometime and we are not prepared about it. So, and also, when we are talking about risk, this thing about probability, error or not, this is also very important. So there is always this uncertainty level, which is also somehow estimated, or better to say, guesstimated. So it's like guessed. It's not always accurate. And so, sorry.
And so we have the
So we have here the so-called loss frequency and then the loss magnitude. So again, loss frequency is the assessment of the likelihood of an attack combined with the probability that this attack will be successful to the organization which it aims. Or, as else mentioned, attack success probability. You might also find this in the literature mentioned as ARO, or annualized rate of occurrence, which is like the yearly probability that an attack can occur and it might happen to your organization. Okay? The combination of these two. So when we are talking about attack success probability, that's like talking about how often does this type of attack occur. And that's like data from the industry, data from the insurance companies, data from relevant reports, surveys, and so on. So for example, if we are talking about an attack that might happen once every 4 years, in this year, in this moment that we are talking right now, the probability for this attack would be 0.25, right? So a fourth. And then the likelihood. What's the probability that this specific vulnerability might turn into an attack and then will be successful? Then this is like something between 0.1 and 1. And usually this is related to the organization itself. So if you have data from last year's, then you might be able to understand this. And this is like probability between 0.1 and 1. For example, a phishing email. It could be like almost real every year, right? So it's like almost probable, like 100%. So probability should be close to 1. And this is about the loss frequency part. And then when we talk about the loss magnitude, this is where we talk about the cost that it might incur to the company as related to the asset. So it's like combining the asset value, the specific asset value, with the percentage of it that might be lost after the attack. And that's also called single loss expectancy in the usual definition, or SLE. Now, when we are trying to assess this part, as I mentioned before, we don't always have the perfect information, so this is also very challenging right now. But we might get along with it if the organization has a very structured, a very good method for assessing all the assets values until this stage. So whatever we did in the risk identification part was very good. And then the other thing is that it might be very difficult to understand what part of the total asset might be lost because of an attack. And this is also organization related. So it's like depending on the organization, historical data, and so on, depending on the experience of the team, and so on. In this case, as is always also the other cases, usually historical information or surveys help. And then there could also be that the modeling and simulation helps. So that's why we will do the lab. We will start the lab in the next hour by using this simulation tool. And if you're wondering, how should we, what are some cases or examples? Let's take two examples. Let's take companies A and B, or asset A and asset B. Let's take this company, which has an information asset as in an online e-commerce database. Okay? According to the industry report, it seems that a typical attack to this organization might happen once every 10 years. This means that there's a 10% chance that an attack might be successful this year. Okay? And then, according to the organizational information to the IT department, it seems that if there is an attack, the first one is the likelihood, sorry. And then if there is an attack, there is a 50% chance of attack success. So it's like 0.5. And then about the asset value. Sometimes you have that the asset is evaluated in terms of money. Sometimes you have that it's evaluated in terms of its priority, as we said before. So in this case, the priority is 50. So from a scale from 0 or 1 to 100, the priority is 50. And that's the asset value. And then the expectations show that if this e-commerce database is going to be attacked, all the information that's there will be lost. So it's like 100% of the asset lost. And the last part would be to understand what is the error margin. And the case here says that the team that's responsible for evaluating the risk is calculating that all the assumptions above are like 90% accurate. So there's like a 10% error which should be added. Then asset B, an internal personal database which is also associated with the firewall, which should be better, right? So, according to the industry reports, there's a 1% chance of an attack because of the security investments. Then, if there will be an attack, there is a 10% chance of attack success. This is according to the IT team from the organization. The value of the asset from 1 or 0 to 100 is like 25, so it's not that relevant as related to asset A, and that's also meaning that it will not be a highly risky event if it's being attacked. And then also from the expectation so far, it seems that if the database is being attacked, there will be a 50% part of it lost because of the attack. And that's because some part of the database is stored in a different location. So if it's going to be attacked this location, we have 50%, and so on. All these assumptions, again, are like 90% accurate. So we should add a 10% to the final value. And then when we have this information, we just multiply it. So we have risk A is 10% chance of success, 50% of likelihood, and then 50 as an asset value, 100% of the exposure rate, and that's also being added the 10%, so it's like 2.75. And then asset B, again 0.01, 10%, 25, 100%, and the 10% is added to the whole value, so it's like multiplying it by 1.1. And then the result will be 0.14 almost. So if we compare 2.75 and 0.14, of course the A asset is highly more risky than B asset. So we should try to do something about asset A, because asset B is okay. Then if we would like to understand how these things work, we might also use modeling and simulation. That's what I mentioned before. And so since we are going to do this in the lab, I thought to put some slides about this in the lecture. So this is a snapshot from the version that you will be using in the lab. I also shared it with you in Blackboard. In order to access it, you have either to download it or to use the web version. Both of them are here in the link. So whenever you click the link, the same link that's put in the announcement and in the Arbeitsgruppe, this is the main link, and then you can choose either you want to download it, and this is the latest version, you put name and so on, or you want to use the web version, which is like you can use it and you can just try to upload the model. Okay? So this is like it. Sorry, I didn't show anything, right? Yet again. So if you click the link, the one here, okay. Then you go to this page, okay? And then you might choose download. This is the latest version. I suggest you download this because then you will have the same features as I do. And then you could also choose NetLogo Web, which is like you are uploading your own model, your own version here, and everything is being played here. Okay? This is the same. It's just a bit different, like interface, of course, but the main thing will be done here. And these are like the different parameters. So, yeah. And so how did we get into this point? So this was actually part of research. This is part of a paper that was published just this year. This has been part of my whole work in the last year when I was a postdoc researcher in NTNU here in Gjøvik. And I was able to publish a few papers about this. Some of them you may also find in my webpage. So we tried to do this because we wanted to use it for the paper that I mentioned, and so we thought to introduce in this paper the main parameters that are able to assess some part of the risk associated to each asset. So we were trying to estimate the loss magnitude, and we were trying to use a simulation tool to make the end user, more aware of what's going on. So it's like using the threat exposure. You might have seen it here. Here is the threat exposure. And here is the asset value. And then we used for this tool a model of a one-year period. So in each step, all the attack agents would try to attack each of the defense agents on a random base. And they would be like different values around that. And so we would have like a single defense agent trying to protect himself from multiple attack agents, okay? Which is like somehow the real case. And then all these simulation ends in 10 years, so it's like trying to simulate a 10-year period. And further on, if we are going into more details, this original research was mostly based on three parameters, which were trying to understand the behavior of the attackers and the defenders in a cyber environment. And in this kind of case, we're talking about parameters or features like resources, skills, and motivation. Resources is like the funding, the budget that attackers and defenders have in terms of cybersecurity activities. And according to the initial version, the resources and all the other features range from 1 to 100. And you will see in the tool, I will show you in a few seconds, that this is also related to how the asset is being evaluated. And then the skills are like the level of training, literacy, and awareness. And in the resources, this scale from 1 to 100 is equal to having a budget equal to from like $100 to like $1 billion, or maybe $1,000 billion. Sorry about that. It should be 1,000 billions. So 10 in the power of 12. 10 times 12. Skills, I mentioned it. And motivation should be like what is like trying to motivate both the attacker and the defender to do what they are doing. Then for this specific version, for the risk management version, we introduce another factor called impact, which would be like the function of exposure factor and asset value, and it should be like the one that we already defined before as the risk overall value. And yeah, then this is a moment when I should start showing you some small stuff about the tool before you can use it in the lab, so just to understand it better. So this is how it shows. I'm not sure how it will show if you download it and open it, but in my case it's a bit like extended. So if it goes the same for you, you just go to zoom and you reduce it in order to have the whole view, and yet again, and I think now it's okay. So here you have the so-called action buttons, where you find setup. If you click setup, everything is started. I mean, ready to start. Then these buttons are like this. The one called run is able to make the whole run until the end. And if I click it, it goes like this. And it ends by this message, because guess what? All the defenders have gone. So if I click OK, all the defenders have gone. And you have some other parameters here. And then if I click setup again, everything starts from the beginning. And if I click go, it will go just step by step. And you can see the steps or the ticks here. You see? And then also the normal speed is like, how fast will the whole process go, okay, or slow? I usually put it at slow, at this normal. And then if you want to untick this, this means that you will not be able to see a tick by tick update, okay? You should just keep it ticked as it is. Then we go below, initial number of agents. You are free here to define the initial number of attack agents and the defense agents. The only limit is the number of them, which is like from 1 or 0 actually, but it should be 1 actually. And 30, that's like for both of them. Okay, the initial setup is 10 attackers and 30 defenders, and you all saw what the result was. And then you also have the risk parameters, which I mentioned before. So you have the exposure factor, which is like from 0.1 to 0.9, because the values here are all randomized, so I didn't want to put to have a exposure factor of 1.1, let's say, right? Because it should be up to 100. So I just chose from 0.1 to 0.9. And then also the asset value will be between 5 and 45. So it's like assets that are relevant, so not a zero value, because then it wouldn't be relevant, it would just be 0, 0, and so on. And then 45, which is like almost half of the whole budget that one of these agents has. Okay, so what's the main logic behind it is that an attacker will attack each of these subjects, and then the part that's lost from the subject will be related to the things that are here, and the impact function. Sorry. And then you have the attackers and the defenders, where you have the overall amount of the agents. The attackers are here, right? And then you have also skills, motivation, and resources for each side. So it's like you might try to see how this affects or how this changes in time. And then the plots, you already saw them. They try to plot whatever is happening with resources, motivation, and skills through time. So yeah. And the way how NetLogo is the interface also includes info tab and the code. The code is open access, so you might feel free to change anything. This was just used for a paper and for this thing, and I will be very happy if you will be willing to suggest anything, any changes or something. And if you are willing to work on this further, maybe on your thesis or whatever, your other projects that you have. This is something that I have been developing since the last year, I told you, and I think that I might still be able to go on and improve it. Yeah. So, okay. I think if there is no further question, we might still go on, right? Is there any question to the tool? So yeah. Then we have the risk control. So after the risk assessment, the last part of the risk process is related to the risk control. That's when we start deciding what are we going to do with all the information that we have right now. So if the asset is highly risky, then we might need to do something. If it's not so highly risky, then we might need to do something else. There is also this so-called flow chart in the next slide. So there are five main strategies. Sometimes you may find in the literature, you may find less strategies, but this is like the most, what do you call it, the wider aspect. Risk defense. This is done when the team will try to reduce any risks that is like uncontrolled by applying additional safeguards. So it's like, if the risk is too high and we need to reduce it further, we should apply this thing before it gets real. And then we also might apply risk transfer. So transfer the risk. So it's like trying to shift the whole cost of this risk to another asset, trying to change something, to another process or to another organization. Risk transfer is like when we are trying to have this new system updated or new system built, we're always trying to consult with a specific company, right? Because we are not having the expertise for that. So we want some outsider, some outsourcing company, and that's like transferring the risk to them because they will be able to deal with this, with that part of the job better than us. Risk mitigation is when you are trying to reduce the impact of a certain risk by performing these activities after the attack has occurred. So that's like recovery, contingency planning, and so on. Risk acceptance is when the risk level is low enough that the organization decides and the team decides to accept it. So we will take it, it's okay. It's okay to have a bit of risk, as I mentioned before. And then risk termination is when the risk is high enough and the options are such that it's better if you just eliminate this asset, like destroy it or whatever, sell it or something, and you don't have to care about the risk related to that. That's how you use risk termination strategy. And so you start by identifying the threats, and then also, is the system vulnerable? If not, there's no risk. Is it exploitable? If not, there's no risk. If there is any vulnerability, then there's both threats and vulnerabilities, so we might do something about it. There is some risk. Is the attackers winning more than losing because of this? No. We should accept the risk because there's not much to lose. Is the loss expected higher than the organization accepted level? No, we should accept the risk. Then if it's higher, the risk is unacceptable, so we should either mitigate it, terminate it, etc. Qualitative versus quantitative risk management. Whenever we are talking about qualitative management or qualitative assessment and so on, we are talking about an approach that does not use like measures or real data or absolute numbers to a certain event or activity. We are just trying to understand, for example, what is the most severe threat, and we are trying to rate them from 1 to 5. This is not and real data. This is just like a categorization. This is just like a non-numerical value or ranking of this action or activity. And this is when we are talking about qualitative. So it's like listing all attacks and then rating them by the probability of occurrence. When we're talking about quantitative analysis, we're talking about real data. We're talking about what is the probability, I mean, more real data, because then we also have to consider that error margin. What is the probability of a value of a attack to the organization? It might be 10%, it might be 30%, and so on. So this is the basic difference between them. Usually when we're talking about risk assessment or information security, and when you see all these surveys, it's very difficult to have these real figures, real costs. More it's like to rank them or rate them, and that's like qualitatively speaking. The simulation tool that I showed you that you will use later on will be trying to help you on using more quantitative methods than qualitative ones. And then, what are some of the best practices that we might use for as related to the risk management? In terms of individuals, It's like typical advice, using antivirus software, strong passwords, security settings, updating security settings, building firewalls, periodical backups, and then trying to protect as much as possible against power loss or power surges. And then on the organizational aspect, or at least on the small business side, protecting your computer devices, keeping this, your data safe, using the internet safely, also protecting the network, the servers, securing what are the most critical business applications, and trying to manage your computers right from the servers so that you will be able to deny access to whoever is not authorized to do it. This is the summary. So, risk management examines and documents the information technology security that's being used in an organization. It helps the organization identify the vulnerabilities and take reasoned steps in order to assure the level of confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And then the primary goal of the information security is not to have zero level risk, but to have a certain level of residual risk that should be in line with the risk level, with the risk appetite level of the organization. So for this lecture, shortly, we are using the chapter 5 from Data Secret for Leather and also material from the chapter 5 of the Principle of Information Security, Risk Management. And then also something from the paper that I mentioned. And then the plan for next week. The lecture will be related to a guest speaker coming here from the University of Zurich and talking about ethical issues in cybersecurity. You will be more informed through Blackboard by several announcements. And I hope you will enjoy the lecture next week and that we will learn something more altogether. Then, deliverables and events. The project plan deadline has already passed. You are now required to start scheduling. I mean, now it's really mandatory to have a scheduled meeting with your supervisor, at least one, because you should start working on your projects. There's no more time to start developing and improving your project plan. There's absolutely no more time to start improving or developing further your proposals. So everything that you should do by now should be related to the final report, to the final project. I discussed it with my colleagues and we thought that it would be the best option to have the final report, the final product output from the report available by week 45, which is like 4 weeks from now. And then the presentations should be available by week 46, which means that some of your teams, half of them possibly, should be able to present the project by week 46, by Tuesday, 12th of November. So 5 weeks from now. Yes. If you deliver the presentation on Tuesday, you shouldn't deliver the report 2 days before. That's the answer. So you are not expected to deliver the final report by Sunday if you are delivering the final presentation by Tuesday. You understand? It's just 2 days difference. So you should be able to deliver it even before. You should be able to deliver at least a complete draft of the final report with some remarks and something by Tuesday before it, so Tuesday week 45. And then you should discuss it with the supervisor and so on. And what's next? We will talk about, we will deal with the lab, with the tool, when we start the next hour. And then, for the project plan, I'm not sure if any of you have already been able to have the final project plan approved, but I'm sure some of you have, some others don't, I mean the teams. But I'm here now to announce that all the project plans are officially approved, which means that you don't need to work on them further. You need to work on the project. And then, if there was something that you needed to do to improve the project plan, you might include it in the final report, right? So it's like a reflection. Okay, we should have done this thing better. We should have expected this thing, especially in terms of risk and quality control. That part. I think most of the teams were lacking that part. So especially on that part, if you will feel in the end of the project that something was wrong that should be predicted before, you should put that in the final report so as to understand that you have learned from that, okay? And not just to improve it and say, okay, I improved it by week 44 or 43 or whatever. That's about the project plan. And then the final report, it might be that I will be the only one evaluating the final report for each of your teams. So I would hopefully ask you to deliver it in English, because reading it in Norwegian would be a bit challenging. I'm learning Norwegian, but I'm not that good. So I would have to translate, you know, page or paragraph by paragraph. So it's like a bit challenging. So I would, yeah, and I think you would be able to do it. I will not be judging your English, make sure about that. Just try to deliver everything in English for the final report. And the final presentation, I also discussed with my colleagues, and that's also related to why we chose these 2 weeks. Because we thought that it should be like each presentation from your teams should not be longer than 15 minutes. And then since 1 hour, one academic hour is like 45 minutes, we should be able to have three project presentations each hour. And then if there are any questions, comments, etc., we should be delivering them once these three presentations end. And then we start with other three presentations and so on. Yeah. I should be the one listening to all the presentations, so I should be with all the teams. And then if the other teams would like to join, they are free to do it. Yes. So we will do this, but there is time for this. I'm just telling you now that we have the deadline and so on, so you are ready and prepared about that. Okay? Any more questions? And just a final thought, if you ever wondered about it, this should be the structure of the project plan. So at least this should be part of each of the project's plans from your teams until Sunday. So yeah. See you in the lab.